I told God that I've had my share of a Job experience, so he can pick somebody else for next time. None of you. So today I would like you to think with me on this topic, disappointment with God. Disappointment is one word, one state of mind with which all of us are familiar in one form or another. Yet, it is one word that few of us feel comfortable to utter, to speak about loudly and publicly, unless it is in a fit of anger when our disappointment has long been transformed to bitterness. So today I want to share with you the story of a woman who was disappointed with God. But her disappointment was not the last of the story. It went from being transformed from a story of pain, loss, and disappointment to a story of redemption. The story of Ruth. And we're going to look at Ruth chapter 1. And we're going to read just 3 verses off of it. Verses 19 to 22. So this is the story of Ruth as a quick background. This is the story of Naomi, her husband, 2 boys who became 2 men later, and their wives, Orpah and Ruth. And this is the first chapter, and the Bible starts telling us what happened. So it says, so the 2 women went on until they came to Bethlehem. That's after Naomi's husband, 2 sons have died, and then the 2 women made a choice, the 2 daughters-in-laws. One chose to go with Naomi, the other one stayed behind in her home country. And this is the story of Naomi and Ruth as they arrived in Naomi's native country of Israel. So the 2 women went on until they came to Bethlehem. When they arrived in Bethlehem, the whole town was stirred because of them. And the women exclaimed, "Can this be Naomi?" "Don't call me Naomi," she told them. "Call me Mara, because the Almighty has made my life very bitter. I went away full, but the Lord has brought me back empty. Why call me Naomi? The Lord has afflicted me. The Almighty has brought misfortune upon me." So Naomi returned from Moab, accompanied by Ruth, the Moabite, her daughter-in-law, arriving in Bethlehem as the barley harvest was beginning. So Naomi experienced disappointment to the point, as you could see, a little bit blaming God here. "The Lord has brought this upon me." You have experienced disappointment. Whether you want to say it out loud or not, you have experienced disappointment. I have experienced disappointment. See, you experience disappointment when there is a gap between your expectation or hope and reality. So to some of you, there is a gap between what you expected your marriage to be and the marital reality that you're living now. The marriage that looked so promising the day you said "I do" is no longer as sweet and fulfilling as you had anticipated. You had expectations of God. He's supposed to be all loving, all powerful, all forgiving, and in control of all circumstances. But your reality seems to tell a different story. If you're not at that place now, some of you, you have been at that place. And you have not, if you have not been at that place and are not at that place now, brace yourself. I got news for you. You will be at that place. Sometimes, whether it's through your own mistakes, choices that you've made, or through what people have done to you, life sometimes is unfair. Life will throw you curveballs. Our curveball came on the evening of April 28th, 2018. You have a kid who is perfectly healthy. Have something real, you know, you're not sure what it is, and you go, and next thing you know, literally 5 hours later, he's on a ventilator, life support, heart, lung, bypass machine. Where did that come from? Where is the God who's supposed to be in control? I'm a preacher, Lord. Things will not work out the way you expect them. Your kids are not turning out the way you want. Your boss is unfair, making your life at work miserable. You may compare your plight to my plight. I may think my plight is worse than yours, but in your little shoes right now, as you are walking it, it's the worst thing that could happen to you. Someone you trusted. Someone was supposed to protect you and love you, instead abused you. So in some ways you feel damaged as a result, and you wonder, where is God? In the midst of all of that, you are wondering, where is God? That God was supposed to be in control of my life or my circumstances. That God is supposed to be all-loving, all-powerful. Where is he? And as time goes by, you continue to pray. You continue to believe God for a miracle, for that marriage, for that child, for that job, for that circumstance. You continue to ask for relief. You continue to trust, but nothing happens. Nothing is going your way. Nothing is going the way you would want it to go. And to a lot of us, you will face this mathematical formula. And that mathematical formula is something that I faced personally when Akeem was in the hospital. And this is the mathematical formula. You're going to have troubles plus time minus unanswered prayer. Except that the answer to that equation is up to you. Some of you, you're going to be in trouble. Situations are going to come. And usually when things start going bad the first time, you're going in with this, like, this faith, this trust. God's got my back. God's going to fix it. You're just praying. You're asking people to pray. You're doing all kind of stuff. You know this is going to happen. Then time starts kicking in. The circumstance doesn't change. A day goes by. 5 days go by. And I remember in our circumstance when Akeem was in the hospital and the doctor said, oh, you know what? I mean, 90% of kids who, because he's so healthy, who has myocarditis, 90% of them within 7 days, they're off of ECMO. ECMO is that heart bypass machine. They'll be off of it, and then sometimes they don't need anything. No medication. They're going to be good. So we're praying God for that miracle. I mean, I'm trusting. I'm pleading Jeremiah 30 verse 17. I will restore you to health and I will heal your wounds. And this is the prayer. I know exactly how God should fix that situation. I know exactly. And I said, Lord, when you do it, I'll write a book. I mean, people are going to hear about it, that you came through. And 7 days go by, and kid is not coming off ECMO. If anything, things are going worse. And you get into that situation every day when you see two doctors coming down, and you want to run, you want to hide, you don't want to hear it. Because every time they come back, two or more, it's bad news. So I've learned it. And they come in very kind of a stern face, and yeah, and you want to run, and it's more of that. And then 10 days go by, one more procedure, and time is going in. And I remember every single day I was in the chapel on my face before God. Melissa was in the chapel. on her face before God. And for me, I was listening to a particular music not every day, 5 times a day. She must have gotten sick to the music by Mercy Me called Even If. I listen to it and I pray and I'm telling God, I know exactly how you're going to fix it. Nothing happens. And I know you are in that situation. And if you haven't been in that situation, brace yourself. You're going to believe God for that marriage. Believe God for that child. Believe God for that job. Believe God for that circumstance. And you're going to pray and time is going to keep ticking. And the circumstance is not going to change. And in your mind, you're experiencing unanswered prayer. But in God's mind, you're experiencing prayer being answered, but not the way you want it to be answered. And then you have to make a choice. The choice that you make after that equal sign will affect the rest of your life. The temptation that to throw in the towel and walk out on God will affect the rest of your life. And to many of us, including to me, I'd gotten to that point where, of course, I wasn't going to walk out physically. It's too embarrassing to walk out physically on God, walk out of the church. No, I wouldn't walk out physically on God. My heart would have walked out on God. And I would be physically in church, but you wouldn't know that my disappointment with God is so intense that I'm just, my body is here, but my heart is not with God. I would be like the prodigal son, not the one who walked out on the father and went off to the far country. I'd be like the other prodigal son who chose to stay home, but has went further apart from the father than the other child who had physically walked out. Many of you are in that state, or you've been in that state where God is not solving your problem the way you want him to solve them. And you have this tinge of disappointment that frankly turns into bitterness toward God. You don't understand, you're confused, and before you know it, your heart walks away from God, even though you're physically perhaps in the church. Or maybe your heart walks away from God and you come to church twice a week so that you can show yourself, but your heart is not with God. Perhaps you're in that marriage. You have not walked out physically, but your heart has walked out of that marriage. And what you do in that moment of disappointment with God, disappointment with the children, disappointment with that marriage, disappointment with that circumstance will affect the rest of your life. As I said before, the temptation to throw in the towel and walk out of God, walk out on the job, walk out of that marriage, walk out of that church, and perhaps sometimes walk out of life itself can be very strong. And when that temptation comes, what do you do? What do you do? 3 women face a decision point. In the midst of their disappointment and in the midst of their darkest hour, Naomi, Orpah, and Ruth. And they couldn't afford at that moment to be stuck in paralysis of analysis. They needed to make a move. They were disappointed at God. Clearly you hear Naomi speaking and said, God has done those things to me. I am disappointed. This is the God who was supposed to protect my family. This is the God who was supposed to protect my husband, my children. What in the world is going on? Especially when I know, Lord, I have not done anything wrong. Where are you? Sometimes life circumstances will force some decisions upon you. When the company lays you off or the boss fires you unjustly, you don't get to decide, should I stay, should I go? The decision is made for you. The only decision that you have left to do is where to turn and what is your next move. Yes, you are in that marriage that is difficult. Yes, the child is sick. Yes, you are diagnosed with perhaps a terminal or painful illness. Yes, the job is intense and your boss is really being a pain. Yes, the marriage is not what you wanted it to be. Yes, you are in the midst of this impossible situation. The decision is made for you. You are there. Now your decision point is where to turn and what's your next move. Because disappointment is a fact of life. You will be disappointed. Welcome to life. Sometimes as parents, we try to protect our children from being disappointed. No, they've got to be disappointed and deal with it. What you do with that disappointment, that is a choice. And the choices that you make will impact the rest of your life. And in fact, as I prayed and thought this through, realize there are three choices that you can make. The first choice when you face those circumstances, and these are the choices that I had to make. And I had to really look at my heart. There was no risk of me working out physically because it would be too embarrassing. Like the pastor walks out of his church. You know, right? And that doesn't cling too well. But my heart, I had to make a decision. Will my heart walk out of God? Would my heart walk away from that God that I say that I believe? And there are three choices that you and I will need to make whenever you face those disappointing times in the marriage, with your children, with that job, with the church, with a friend, with God himself. First one is you can trust and cling to God. Even if you don't understand, you cling to God and you trust. In the midst of the confusion, you trust. And you get closer to God. As things get worse, you draw closer to him. You cry, you weep, you pour out your soul before him. You cling to God. Or you can cause your disappointment to cause you to walk away from God. And you can walk away from God, as I've said before, physically or spiritually. Your heart could walk away from God. Or the third choice, you can allow your disappointment to cripple you spiritually. Where some people, they're going into this confusing time where they walk away from God in terms of their heart. They try to draw near to him. They come back and then they fall into that situation of being crippled, paralyzed spiritually. Disappointment with God, as I said, is a state of mind that many of us have experienced. But few of us are, those committed Christians, few of us are willing to acknowledge it publicly. You know, disappointment with God has caused people to walk out of the church. Sometimes when people don't come to church and they're missing Sunday after Sunday and you say, well, they're discouraged or they're busy. But really, frankly, it's because they just get so disappointed with God. God is not giving them what they wanted. God is not solving their problem quickly enough. God is not blessing them in the way that they wanted enough. So they decided it's not worth it. They walk away from God. So if you're facing a life circumstance where you are disappointed with God, and it's okay to experience some level of disappointment with God. Don't listen to people who are just going to tell you disappointing with God. You know, it's what you do with that disappointment. I got to a point where I was disappointed with God. When those doctors and newest heart surgeon and all the whole sat me and Melissa around that table and said, hey, listen up. That heart that you were hoping that would recover on its own, it's too far gone. And the word that they used was, and it's decompensating. He doesn't have much time. And in fact, if we don't find a heart in the next X time, it's not going to make it. So now you go from praising God, trusting God to heal that wound, that wounded heart, physically wounded heart, to now almost like getting in the sense of, okay, Lord, now we need a new heart. Was it settling? Or was it all along God's plan? You trust God. And what I had to do at that moment, what Melissa had to do in that moment, was to turn to God in trust. And this is what I got from the book of Ruth. Your first step is return. Return to God. When life throws you a curveball, when things get really, really difficult in the marriage, at home, at work, turn to God. Because he's the trick. He's the reality. It is not when you face tough situations, when you face a tough marriage, when you face illness, when you face disappointment, it is not a question whether or not you're going to turn to something or someone. You will. You are programmed as human beings to turn to something or someone in your moment of need. The question is, who do you turn to? To what or to whom will you turn? The book of Ruth is a beautiful and painful story. And in that book, the word return is listed 13 times. You see, the circumstances of life had already made the decision for Naomi, along with her daughters-in-law, Ruth and Orpah, to return. They couldn't be in that country anymore. They had no men. And back in the days, a woman without a man is left completely vulnerable. Any man can come and abuse them physically, sexually, anyone. They have no protection because it was a patriarchal society where in order for you as a woman to have protection, you needed a man in your life, either a grown son or a husband or at the very least a brother. So they couldn't stay. Ruth and Orpah and Naomi had to turn somewhere. See, Orpah, which is the other daughter-in-law, most likely allowed her disappointment, her pain, to let her see God as a do-nothing God. So she decided, I'm done with this God of Israel. I'm going back to my people in Moab. Ruth made the decision to turn to Israel and therefore to the God of Israel, because even in the midst of Naomi's pain and disappointment, she still remembered that God is still God. And she trusted that God. See, when Ruth made the decision to turn to Israel and her destination, she also turned away from her pagan God, the pagan God of the Moabites, which was Chemosh. And as I said before, logic tells us you can't face both ways. You can't face both ways. When we turn to the north, that means I have my back to the south. When I turn to the south, I have my back to the north. So what do I mean by that? What that means is that turning towards someone implies that you are simultaneously turning away from another person who is positioned in the opposite direction. And this is a very important principle. Because when you turn to God, that means you turn away from Satan and from the world. You turn away from your circumstances because they are away in opposite direction from God. When you turn to something else, you're turning away from God. So for example, when a husband in a difficult marriage turns to an affair with another woman, he automatically turns away from his wife and his marriage. That's why when these things happen and there's sexual immorality within the confines of a marriage, the Bible says the bond of marriage is broken, freeing the other person. When a man or woman in pain turns to alcohol, food, or drug to dull the pain and to cope, then she automatically turns away from facing life with sobriety and with a clear mind, because you can't have both at the same time. You know, you may be unsure whether God is at work in your situation. Some of you've prayed and nothing is happening. And you move from where is God to is there a God? Is this God even at work? Am I wasting my time? And because you're not seeing His hand in the way you would want to see it, may I say, in the way you would want to see it, you assume, like Orpah, that you are serving a do-nothing God. And I have truth for you, and I have news for you. There is no such thing as a do-nothing God. He's always working on your behalf. You know, it's Romans 8:28 where Paul says, "For we know that in all things God works together for good for those who love Him and those who have been called according to His purpose." And then it continues in 29, which is not posted there, but it says, and it continues, says, "For those He foreknew, He also predestined to be conformed to the image of Jesus Christ." So everything that's happening in your life, God has an ultimate purpose, which is use those things, those stuff, the bad, the good, the ugly, to transform you into the image of Jesus Christ. And it's not sexy for a lot of us. It's not. I'd rather God bless me with a new car if my car is broken down, instead of teaching me patience and humility by not having a car. You see, we don't want that kind of stuff. But the bottom line is God is working. He's working in your life. And the nice thing is the story of Ruth is not a story of defeat. It's not a story of all bad news. God was working behind the curtain. God is working behind the curtain in your life. As Christians, we've been exposed to too many churches who are trying to teach us that God wants everybody to be healthy, to be wealthy, to be happy, to be successful, and not that it doesn't. But the ultimate purpose of God in our lives is just to transform you into the image of Jesus Christ. You see the 30, 40, 100 years that you'll be living on this earth, God is seeing eternity. Your lifespan on this earth is a drop in an ocean compared to the eternity that you will spend with Him. And He wants to prepare you on this earth for that journey with Him and that life with Him in eternity. So ultimately, He wants to use your marriage, your job problems, your kid problems, everything for so that you can be transformed to the image of Jesus Christ. But He's working because He loves you. He's not looking at you with a cold-hearted heart. He wants you to experience some level of joy, you to experience some level of reprieve in the midst of your suffering as it transforms you into the image of Jesus Christ. So we need to remember that God, again, we too often we measure the work of God in our own lives and the life of others by the outward signs and outward manifestations that we see. Somebody is sick, they're not being healed, we're thinking God is not working in their lives. Someone's marriage is going downhill, it ends in a divorce, we're thinking God is not working in their lives. Someone's child is going on the wrong path, they end up in jail, we're thinking God is not working in their lives. When nothing could be further from the truth. Often, God does his most powerful work behind the curtain, without immediate or visible results. And here's an important truth that we all need to remember as believers. The lack of immediate outward result is not an indication that God is not working, because he is working. The lack of immediate result or outward result is not an indication that God is not working in your life. He is working in your life. In fact, when you look at the book of Ruth, you never see any big kaboom miracle of God. It's all like God working through the normal circumstances in the lives of Ruth and Naomi to accomplish his purpose. Sometimes God does work in the light of day for all to see, as he did on behalf of the nation of Israel, opening the Red Sea, feeding the crowd with manna. I mean, that's a big stuff. But that's because he wanted the world to see that there is a God in Israel. The whole point was not even for the people of Israel. It was for the other nations to see the manifestations of that God. Other times, and more often than not, God chooses to work on behalf of those who trust him within the shadow of the night, as he did for Ruth and Naomi. Nowhere, as I said, in the book of Ruth, do you see any outward supernatural manifestation, miraculous manifestations of God. As Naomi and Ruth were facing the uncertainties of their dire circumstance, God was the God of the ordinary. The ordinary. Even the timing of their return, he had orchestrated. But they thought that they made the decision to return at the time of the harvest of the barley. When situations are out of control, we wonder sometimes silently, and other times we shout out, where is God? And when things were looking bleak for Ruth and Naomi, and appeared to remain bleak, God was working behind the shadows, using the basic things of life, the basic turns and twists of normal life. God was at work. And God is at work in your life. You may not feel it. There is no kabing, miracle, flashlights going on. God is at work in your life. God is at work inside of you, even in the midst of the chaos. The fact that you're able to withstand the pressures that you've been under is God working. He never promised that you wouldn't go through the fire. He never promised that you would never go through the waters. What he said in Isaiah 43 was, though you go through the fires, what does it say? I will go with you. Though you go through the waters, they will not submerge you, but you will go through them. But God is at work. You know, there is a little poem that I love by James Russell Lowell. And he puts the hand of God at work eloquently in that little poem entitled The Present Crisis. And it said, the one piece of it says, truth forever on the scaffold, wrong forever on the throne. Yet that scaffold sways the future. And behind that dim unknown standeth God behind the shadows, keeping watch over above his own. Behind the dim unknown of your circumstance standeth God within the shadows. keeping watch over you, keeping watch over me. You know, the other piece that I want to address is sometimes, for some of you perhaps, who've made some mistakes in your lives, you kind of wonder whether God is angry at you. Is it why those things, everything is, all hell is breaking loose in your life and things are not changing? But the reality, my friend, is that God, you know, and you can think of it like Naomi had said the same thing. Because if you know the background of the book, technically, her husband was not supposed to leave Israel to go to a pagan country, but he did. So Naomi is thinking, oh my goodness, this is God just angry at us and doing all of that to us. But here's the thing that I want you to remember. Regardless of what you've done in your life, whatever the mess that you've created, the sin that you've committed, here's one important truth that I want you to remember. God is not a vindictive God. God is never vindictive toward his children. When he says forgives you, he forgives you. God has no interest on whacking you for life because of something you've done 20 years ago. God is a God of restoration, rest of peace, so that you don't allow the devil to kind of like to mess up your with your mind, thinking that you're paying the price for a sin that you've committed. God is a loving God. He settles the matter, and now it's a clean slate with him, and his job is to get you along and start moving forward in him. Because in Romans 8:38 and 39, he said it, where it says, I'm convinced that neither death nor life, neither angels nor demons, neither present nor the future, nor any powers, neither height nor depth, nor anything else in all creations will be able to separate us from the love of God, which is in Christ Jesus, our Lord. Nothing you can do will cause God to love you less. And by the way, for those of you who want to think that, you know, you can make God love you more by working more, nothing you can do can make God love you any more than he's already had. Because God loved you, regardless of your state, to the maximum level possible. If you're going through some hard times, it's because he's working with you. He's working not to punish, but so that you can be transformed into the image of Jesus Christ. God is not angry with you, nor will he ever be. As I've said before, when I was facing we were facing our own darkness. And as our only son was on a hospital bed, I know for myself, I had to make a choice. And that choice was between disappointment and trust. I came across a song from Mercy and Me that God used. As I said, I've listened to that song several times a day for a month as I prayed. That sustained me in these dark times. Before I wrap it up, I want to share it with you, and I'll come back to wrap up. And it's the song that says, Even If. God can change the circumstances of your life in an inkling of an eye. He can make the pain go away in half a second. But even if you don't, Lord, my hope is you alone. That is the essence of genuine faith. To say like Job, though he strikes me, yet will I trust in him. That's what God wants from you and from me. Even as we feel a tinge of disappointment in him. To trust him, to cling to him, to know that he's got your back, that he loves you. And for those of you who may be wondering where is God and you don't feel the presence of God, you don't feel God at work,
There's that little poem that I want to read and so we can wrap up. It's a poem that most of you already know. You've heard it before. There's the poem Footprints, which to me is a really nice way of reminding us that the Lord is with us even when we don't think he is there. It says, one night a man had a dream. He dreamed he was walking along the beach with the Lord. Across the sky flashed scenes from his life. For each scene, he noticed two sets of footprints in the sand. One belonging to him and the other to the Lord. When the last scene of his life flashed before him, he looked back at the footprints in the sand. He noticed that many times along the path of his life, there was only one set of footprints. He also noticed that it happened at the very lowest and saddest times of his life. This really bothered him, and he questioned the Lord about it. The Lord said that once I decided to follow you, he said to the Lord, Lord, you said that once I decided to follow you, you would walk with me all the way. But I've noticed that during the most troublesome times of my life, there's only one set of footprints. I don't understand why, when I needed you most, you would leave me. The Lord replied, my precious, precious child, I love you, and I would never leave you. During your times of trial and suffering, when you see only one set of footprints, it was then that I carried you. God is carrying you today. When you don't feel God's presence, as you travel through the dark and scary alleys of life, trust God. When you don't feel God's presence, in the darkest times of your life, cling to him. In the nights when you can't sleep, you're anxious, you don't feel his presence, go on your face before him. Because these are the times he's carrying you. Trust him, cling to him, because he's a faithful God.